blessed here in this community to be that safe harbor. Because when you think about it, isn't safety the highest priority of life? I mean, honestly, if we don't feel safe, how can anything else work for us? And it breaks my heart to know that there are people that don't feel safe and actually aren't safe, you know? That's hard for me to feel that is the truth. And has anyone here ever not felt safe? Okay, I would imagine all of us at some point in our life, maybe as a child, you know, fear is just a part of this human experience. And there's times where things are scary. It could be just driving your car, right? There could be a feeling of not safe because there's wild drivers beside you. And so how do we manage a life and to be in safety and to feel that peace? So there are specific groups, of course, that feel less safe than others. For instance, folks of color, okay? Folks of different ethnicities, sexual orientation, genders. There is a bigger safety issue for some folks in some specific groups. And I believe the churches are to be, as in that song, it talks about the place where you can come in from the storm and the church, and you actually said this community. I don't know if that's, I think you had some liberalness, that this community is a safe haven. And I have noticed that, I have witnessed that we are a safe haven for all folks of all expressions, because everyone is a unique individualized expression of the divine. So do you agree that churches ought to be that safe haven? Yes? Yes? And sadly, there are some religious organizations, institutions, churches, where it is not safe to be who we people are, who you are. And that saddens me as well. So the safe harbor to come in from the storm. So I want to switch this over to weather. How many of you are enjoying this hot or weather? Some of you are, good. Hot weather, you know, getting up into the 90 range. Say again? In Albuquerque, they're in, you know, it's hotter in other places, so I'm glad for our, you know, we are cooler here than other parts of the state. And, you know, it is monsoon season. And I'm not familiar a lot with monsoon season. I got to Google monsoon season because I'm like, well, last year we had rain. We had a lot of rain and thunder and lightning, and rain was happening all through June and throughout the summer. And we haven't had any rain, and there isn't any even in the forecast for our area, which puzzles me as to what that's about. One of the things that I didn't know about monsoons, as I was doing my due diligence on some research, is that a monsoon isn't necessarily related to rain and storms. It's actually a seasonal change in the direction of prevailing or the strongest winds of a region, and it can cause wet or dry seasons. It appears we're having the dry season. And, you know, maybe we're having windstorms, you know, heat storms. Does anybody like thunderstorms? Love it. I love a good rainstorm. I love the thunder and lightning. I used to live in a house that was on a golf course, and the whole back of the house was all these sliding glass door windows from top to bottom. And in the middle of the night, when there was a thunderstorm, little Liz would just get out there and just watch the sky. I love to watch that, as long as it's safe and we don't have, you know, the lightning coming down and creating a fire issue, which it sometimes has that opportunity. But, you know, nature is also trying to clear itself, and we're trying to help with that. So, talking about storms, today's talk title is The Eye of the Storm. And how that talk title came to be was when I was in Tahoe at the beginning of the month, I was contemplating, what am I going to have as the talk topic for June 25th, especially since I needed to get Paula that information so she could prepare the music. And what came to my mind was all the challenges that the human race has on a daily basis. We all have challenges. Sometimes they're less, and sometimes they're life-threatening challenges. We have challenges, right? And I can compare those to storms. For instance, ever have a stormy relationship or a storm in the middle of your relationship where there's conflict and tension? How about there might be health storms? And let's just talk about what is the definition actually of a storm. Here's some more research, of course. Got to give you the definition of a storm. Number one, it's a violent disturbance of the atmosphere with strong winds and usually rain, thunder, lightning, or snow. Second definition, an uproar or controversy. A storm, number three, is a serious disturbance or agitated state. So basically, I see a storm as a state of disturbance, right? And a disturbance is basically the interruption of anything that is peaceful and settled. So as disturbance comes into your life, you could refer to that as a storm. And it might be a little storm, or it might be a huge storm. And here's the question. When the biggest storm there is could be seen as maybe a hurricane, where there is more devastation than any other type of storm. And I think about that and all of that whirling wind and the devastation and loss. However, in the middle of that hurricane is what? The eye of the storm. The eye of the storm is that place that is peaceful. It can be, you can see the stars, you can see the sun, you can see the blue skies. There might be some light wind, but it's a very calm place in the midst of a very tumultuous wind storm that is circulating. Now, it's not necessarily a safe place, because I looked that up and it said, no, it's not necessarily safe because it's not going to last long, and those winds that are surrounding it, the wall of the hurricane, are going to come through. However, you do have that time of peace. Now, as I compare that to the storms of life, how do you not get caught up in the political storms, in the global storms, in the financial storms, in the racial injustice storms, in anything that is a disturbance? Because that's what a storm is. It's a disturbance in your life. And how do you keep from not getting caught up in it? How do you find that place of peace and calm? Would you like to know more?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe you're so peaceful that you're just drifting off. Okay. It could happen. So peace, to find that peace. Because here's the thing. The only thing that goes off is our minds. Okay? The thing is happening, but it's the whirling of our own thoughts. You get caught up in all these thoughts. Hey, it happens. It's part of our human nature. And how do I stay centered and calm? So I really want to talk a little bit more about peace. And now you all know it's that state of inner calm. But here's a little description of what inner peace could be. If you can start the day without caffeine. Peace is if you can always be cheerful, ignoring your aches and pains. And if you can resist complaining and boring people with your troubles. Peace, inner peace, could be when you can eat the same food every day and be grateful for it. And if you can understand when your loved ones are too busy to give you time. you have inner peace, if you can take criticism and blame without resentment, and if you can conquer tension without medical help and sleep without the aid of drugs, you might be the family dog. Right? I mean, dogs are pretty happy. I know mine is, and they don't get too disturbed about too much, right? So I liked that. Now, there is another story about peace, and it's called The Peace Prize. And it's written by Michael Webb. And there was once a king who announced throughout his kingdom that his country was going to have a contest. And he was building a new palace, and he wanted to have it decorated with a large painting. And that large painting would depict peace in the world. And that whoever won that peace prize would have a lot of money. So, obviously, there was a lot of people who wanted to send in pictures that would depict peace, because if they got chosen, they would get the cash money. So he had hundreds and hundreds of paintings come in, and he had a hard time deciding, but he finally narrowed it down to two. So he put both of these paintings up and let the people see them, the final two. So the first painting was of this majestic lake, and it was the most tranquil lake that you could imagine. It was so still that the lush hills were reflected in the still reflection of that lake. The sky was a brilliant blue with soft, puffy clouds floating above, and there was wildflowers decorating the grass in the wild fields around. And there was a family of deer gently grazing in the background. The serenity of this painting was one that you just felt the peace. And people actually shed tears because it was so tranquil and it just made them feel so good. The second painting was of a tall, brazen cliff mountain. It was rugged and strong, and it had a few small trees growing out of the cracks on the face of the cliff with the roots kind of gnarled like they were hanging on to the rock. There was an angry waterfall just sliding down this brazen cliff and smashing onto the rocks below. And above it, there was these ominous clouds, dark, and there was lightning flashes. And so it didn't depict peace at all. However, the king finally made his choice and announced that the one that was the winner was the second one. What I neglected to tell you was that in that second painting of the barren cliff, which all of its darkness, that there was a small bush growing halfway up the cliff, and in the woody branches was a tiny nest with a mother bird sitting on her eggs. The people were confused, upset, and furious because they didn't see that at all as being a very peaceful picture. And the king explained by saying that peace is not the same as the absence of conflict. Peace is not the same as the absence of conflict or disturbance. Peace is first and foremost a state of mind. And those who know and have real peace have love in their hearts, even when there is turmoil, disturbance, and turbulence around them. I love that because we think, oh, and I'm just in my Buddha state. I am a Zen and all is calm and peaceful. The better state is when everything is going crazy around you and you are able to come to a sense of peace in the midst of the craziness. You want to have some of that?
Yes.
Okay, good for you. I had one yes. Anybody else like to have a way to get into that center? Anyone else? Thank you. All right, Alex, you're leading the pack here. So, I'm going to tell you how you can achieve inner peace. You good with that? Here's one way. I'm passing on this on to you because it's definitely worked for me. And just by following the simple advice in this article, I have found the secret to inner peace. The article says that the way to achieve inner peace is to finish all the stuff you've started. Makes sense to me, because when you have stuff that you haven't done, that's kind of aggravating. But when you have it all taken care of and you've completed it and finished it, so that's pretty simple advice. So I looked around and looked at all the things that I had started and hadn't finished yet. So today, I finished one bottle of red wine, a bottle of Jack Daniels, my Prozac, a box of chocolates, and a half a gallon of Rocky Road ice cream. You have no idea how good I feel. Right? Okay, well, you might not want to do that one, but, you know, I just figured that would be a moment of peaceful laughter. So the thing about peace in the midst of a storm, there's a story also about Jesus, who is in the boat on the Sea of Galilee, which I actually got to be on the Sea of Galilee on a boat back in 1980. Yeah, I think it was 20. I was in a Christian college. Anyway, the Sea of Galilee. So the disciples, and they're going to go from one side of the lake to the other, and all of a sudden, a storm comes up. Well, Jesus, the great way shower, is sleeping. The disciples are beside themselves because the waves are now rocking and rolling, and they're afraid. They're afraid that they might be hit by lightning. They're afraid they might capsize because it's a pretty ferocious storm. And so they wake up Jesus, and he's like, what's the problem, right? He goes, be still. He just rebukes this storm, and everything calms down. And then he looks at the disciples and goes, why were you so afraid? I like that story a lot, because when I look at the eye of the storm, it's the eye of the storm. How I see something, how I perceive something, how I perceive and believe, I will achieve and receive. I love that they all rhyme, of course, because I'm that rhymer. So how you view something is going to make the difference between getting worried, getting anxious, getting fearful. The fears, doubts, and worries are right here. They're not even real. They're what we are doing with our minds. And we live in a fearful-based world. And fear is not a bad thing. It can actually be our friend, because there are real times when fear is important to pay attention. It's a message saying danger. However, our mind is often, because its job is to look out for danger. It's like the sentry on a ship looking for danger. Danger. You know, and it's, so it's always wanting to protect us. That's the job of the mind. It is here, and it's all about surviving. But the heart is about thriving. And when we can let go of the swirling dervish inside of here that is caught up with all these fearful thoughts, and you can actually say, be still, because there is that part of you. Every character, by the way, in the Bible is part of us. Every character, metaphysically, there's a part of us that is that. And so I have a great way shower, the part of me that knows and is calm, that Jesus part of me, that Christ consciousness is what we speak of. It's the Christ consciousness within you that goes, yeah, this is crazy. And God is here. See, Jesus did not get anxious and crazy. He just went to all of his swirling thoughts, because those fearful thoughts were not actually disciples. It's a depiction. So the swirling thoughts in your mind, your fear thoughts, are your little disciples who haven't quite reached the idea that the divine is here in the midst of this storm, in the midst of it. And I can command my thoughts to be quiet, be still, be still. be still. Be still. Sometimes you have to get really emphatic, right? Be still. And there's another saying in the Bible, be still and know what? Know God. Be still and know God. Be still and know. Be still. You can say that to yourself, be still and know God. Now, I can change, and what is God? Now, the eye of the storm could also be changed from the eye of the storm to the capital I of the storm, okay? There is, and Jesus, there's so many names of what God is. You know, you can call it spirit, whatever. Just recognizing that there is a power and a presence that is everywhere. It is the life force and source of life. It is my life and your life. And we teach in unity that we're all individualized expressions of this divine life, of this divine love. We cannot not be it. But we weren't taught that. I wasn't taught that as a child. I was told I'm a sinner, right? Anybody get the, you're a sinner? Mm-hmm. Oh, such BS. And that stands for belief system. Another way to look at it. So Moses back in the day when he was having the encounter with the God self, it's not something outside of us, it's inside. So he was having this time out in the desert in this place of stillness. And what do I call you? Who do I say you are? I am that I am. I am that I am. You know the two most powerful words there are? I am. We use the words, I use the words I am a lot. I am tired, I am angry, I am sad. And I'm working on it, catching myself. Instead of saying I'm sad, to change my language to I feel sad. Because the I am is claiming who I am. And I am not sadness. God is not the sadness. It takes retraining. This is not work for spiritual sissies. It's about the warrior. I have a warrior on. I spoke of the warrior last week. So be still and know I am. I am that I am. See, Spirit is always in the midst of everything. Whatever's going on, all I have to do is remember. Remember, God is here. Peace is here. Love is here. God is here. Spirit is here. It is right here. Now, the words be still, by the way. Anybody ever try to do a silent retreat and be still? Few of you? I don't know about you, but trying to be still, I'm more noisy than ever. You know, it might be quiet on the outside, but what goes on inside is very, very noisy. It wasn't a silent retreat at all. When I went to Adyashanti's silent retreats, I'm like, this is not working. I'd go in and we'd spend an hour to be in the silence. My mind is all over the place. This is what worked for me. I told my mind, think of every thought you can think when we sat down for a session. Interestingly enough, it shut up. I didn't, you know, just think of everything you can think of. And it went, what? And I actually had silence. So reverse psychology worked for me in that moment. Because what we try to do is we try to be still. That's not actually the meaning of meditation. I love Adyashanti's speaking of that. And it's more about observing and being the observer of your thoughts and not be caught up in your thoughts. In the book, Fully Awake and Truly Alive, which I've started a class on, there's a chapter this week that's talking about stillness and solitude and that they are separate. And it's a really good read. But to understand that to be still is to be present. Be still and know the I am is present in the storms of life, and that I can be centered in the I am. So you can practice the I am-ness, be observing. isn't that interesting is one of my tools that I go to just to see my thoughts. Isn't that interesting? That's what I'm thinking or feeling right now. So God is both spirit, divine, whatever name you call it, has both aspects of impersonal and personal, okay? The impersonal part of spirit is what we call maybe the law. It is the part that says there are universal principles that work all the time, regardless of who you are, where you are. That is just the way it is. Doesn't matter what you believe, although it does. Because one of those principles is it's done unto you as you believe. That is a impersonal, whatever you believe, doesn't matter who you are, whatever you believe is, it's true for you. Whatever you believe is true for you. And the great thing is if we can change our beliefs. It might take a little work to see what the subconscious beliefs are and change them up. So that's the impersonal law, and that's something we can also depend on. It's not fluctuating. But there's the personal part of God, to have a personal relationship. And God is not a person, but it's personified through us. And what if God was your best friend? What if God was the love that loves you and is with you and is for you 100% of the time, never leaves you? You might leave your thoughts of it being present, but the truth is you have a friend inside that you can talk to and listen to. And when I talked about seeing things differently, oh, my dear beloved God self, that's what I call my friend, God self. How can I see this situation differently? Because it's, again, how I'm seeing it is how I'm going to experience it in the craziness of our world and our personal lives. So you have a friend that you can call on anytime, anywhere, and it is beating in your hearts. Don't forget that the eye of the storm lives within you and is there for you, with you, 100% of the time. You don't have to be caught up because you have a friend. And so it is.